then we chant each line, or word for word first?
Yeah, word for word first is nice.
Like, which word for words do you do? Just like these, or like these?
They start to the individual. I like to do the synonyms, so they sort of know the meaning before they chant.
Oh, okay. All right. And then you read verse, and then perk word also?
Yeah, it helps keep them awake if they read the perk word. You have the mic.
They read it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Right.
Are we ready? Ready? Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today, we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service, Text 10. First, we'll start with the synonyms. Akamaha, one who has transcended all material desires. Sarvakamaha, one who has the sum total of material desires. Va, either. Mokshakamaha, one who desires liberation. Udaradihi, with broader intelligence. Tivrena, with great force. Bhakti yogena, by devotional service to the Lord. Yajeta, should worship. Purusham, the Lord. Param, the Supreme Whole. Akama sarva kamo va. Moksha kama udaradihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Yajeta purushamparam. Akama sarva kamo va. Moksha kama udaradihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Yajeta purushamparam. Akama sarva kamo va. Moksha kama udaradihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Yajeta purushamparam.
Yeah.
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. A purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, or the Supreme Personality. It is He only who can award liberation to the impersonalists by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahmajyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahmajyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the supreme impersonal Brahmajyoti must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage.
Kamaha is one who has no material desire. A living being, naturally being the part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Purusham, Purnam, has as his natural function to serve the Supreme Being, just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert like the stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position, and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as Bhajaniya Parama Purusha Sukha Matra Sva Sukha Sukhatvam in his Sundarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of the world, and such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropism, communism, minds of less intelligent persons.
In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Vrajamuni for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis love the Lord without any return, and this is the perfect exposition of the Ayakma spirit. Kama spirit, or desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, whereas the spirit of Ayakma is fully exhibited in the spiritual world.
Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahmajyoti can also be exhibitions of Kama spirit, if they are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from the material miseries. Pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the Kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instruction of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. Thus he became a Kama. That is the perfect stage of a perfect living being.
Udaradihi means one who has a broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods, and such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita. As Hridayana, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses, one cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with a desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly. And everyone, whether an akama or sakama, or moksha kama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana. As the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and there is therefore tibra, similarly unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc. may be performed by one and all regardless of inner motive.
Alright, so in your study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you're examining it in terms of the broader principles of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. You know, sambandha means understanding the relationship, you know, between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His eternal parts and parcels, the jiva souls. And abhideya means the practices that help one realize that. And prayojana means the ultimate goal. So now you're looking at verses from the Bhagavatam that explain or illuminate, you know, the concept of abhideya, the practice of devotional service. And the specific topic today is the question, am I pure enough to practice devotional service? When you know, people think of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally they're thinking, and this is true ultimately, that it requires a lot of purity to try to connect oneself to the Supreme Personality of Godhead on the level of spirit soul. So some people may feel discouraged. Well, I have other desires. You know, it isn't the only desire that I have. I might think theoretically it might be nice to devote myself to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, given that I think it's possible such a personality exists. But I have other goals as well. You know, I have other desires. I have other ambitions. So the question may arise, can I really do that? Can I really engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead if I have other desires, if I have other ambitions? And, you know, the answer being given in this text of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that you can engage in devotional service even if you have other desires. As a matter of fact, it's even said not that just you can, but that you should engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if you do have these other kinds of desires. Now, in previous verses in this chapter, it's been advised that if one has material desires, desires for different sorts of material powers or material benedictions or material benefits, one is advised to worship specific demigods. You know, there was in text 2-7 of this same chapter, just previous to, you know, the verse we read, you know, there are different recommendations given. You know, one who desires powerful sex should worship the heavenly king Indra. One who desires good progeny should worship the progenitors called the Prajapatis. One who desires good fortune should worship Durgadev, the superintendent of the material world. But here, in this verse, it's being recommended, don't do that. Because all of those different demigods who are capable of granting, you know, these different material benedictions cannot do so without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even if one gets a benediction from a demigod, of course, this is a very unusual concept. You know, today, people think, you know, that if they want some material benefit, some power, some position, some wealth, they think that the way to get it is by their own work, you know, their own hard work. They don't have a conception that these things are under the control of higher powers in the universe. But, you know, we observe that even, you know, if people work very hard, they don't necessarily, you know, get the result. You know, many people would like to be very wealthy, and many people are working very hard to achieve that, but not everyone actually achieves it. That means work itself isn't, you know, the ultimate cause. Maybe there are many thousands of people writing code for programs trying to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, but not everybody achieves that. That's a sign that just hard work isn't really enough. So, in the Vedic cosmology, you know, we learn there are higher personalities in the cosmos who are responsible for awarding, you know, these benedictions. But really, they can only do so with the sanction of Krishna. It's like different ministers in a government, they get their power from the chief executive officer. Or in a military, you know, different officers, they get their authority and power from the commanding general. So, ultimately, these demigod representatives of Krishna get their power from him. So it's recommended that one go directly to the source. Even if one has a material desire, it's being recommended here that the best way to ultimately fulfill it is not to simply work hard on one's own or approach some demigod, but to render pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the activities of devotional service are themselves purifying. Even if you're not pure, you can take them up and they will purify you. And a good example of a personality who had material desires yet approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead for fulfillment of them was Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva was the son of a king, and he wanted the affection of his father, but his father had more than one wife. You know, Dhruva Maharaj's mother wasn't his favorite wife. He had another wife who was more dear to him in terms of their relationships. And this other wife also had a son. So, once Dhruva was trying to affectionately climb on the lap of his father, but the other wife, you know, not his mother, but the mother of the other son, told him, "No, you can't sit on the lap of your father. You know, I'm his favorite wife, and that position's for my son. You know, maybe in your next life you'll take birth as my son, and you'll also have that privilege." So Dhruva, although a child, became a little upset, a little angry, because, you know, he wanted something and it was denied to him. So then he became desirous of having a kingdom even greater than that of his father. And, you know, he approached his mother and he expressed his desires, and she advised, well, great sages, when they want things, they go to the Supreme Lord and out in the forest. So he went to the forest and he encountered Narada Muni. And Narada Muni asked him why he was going into the forest, and he said he wanted to achieve the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he wanted certain things. He wanted a kingdom greater than that of his father, and he also wanted revenge against his stepbrother and stepmother, you know, who had caused him pain. And these are very common desires among people, to want revenge against someone who's offended them, or to want some great position greater than that of, you know, one's rivals. So he had material desires. And Narada Muni at first tried to dissuade him. He said, you're just a little boy. You shouldn't be out here in the forest. You should go home. But Dhruva was very determined. So Narada Muni gave him a mantra to chant and told him to go to a particular location, Madhuvan, which is in the Vrindavan region. So he went there, and he meditated using the mantra recommended by Narada Muni, and Krishna eventually appeared to him. And when Krishna appeared to him, he was so overwhelmed, you know, by the personality of Godhead, and he was very sorry that he had approached Krishna for some material purpose. But Krishna gave him, ultimately, a kingdom greater than that of his forefathers, and the stepmother and stepbrother who had offended him were killed, ultimately. And this shows something, that even if one is full of material desires, if one approaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead, either Krishna will fulfill that desire and at the same time give one pure devotional service, ultimately in the end, and residence in the spiritual world. Like Dhruva was promoted to a Vaikuntha planet, Dhruva Loka. Yeah, in the end. Whereas if one worships a demigod, the benefit is temporary. Chine punya martya lokam vishanti. You may be promoted to some heavenly position, but when the results of your worship of the demigod go away, when your punya is exhausted, then you fall down again. So, worship of Krishna and pure devotional service can be carried out even if one does have, you know, if one feels one is not pure in the beginning. One will become purified, and either Krishna will remove the material desires and impurities, or he'll fulfill them, but at the same time, ultimately give you pure devotional service and residence in the spiritual world. So in this verse, it's being recommended, whether one's full of material desires or one desires liberation. You know, many people become frustrated in pursuit of material desires, so they simply want liberation. That's also a selfish desire, you know, that I want to become free from something. But the best position to be in is akama, which means having no desire for oneself, but desiring to please Krishna by pleasing Krishna's representative, the bona fide spiritual master. So the answer to our question that's being given in this verse is, you know, you can't say I'm not pure enough to practice devotional service. It's recommended, even if you're not pure, even if you have other desires than pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if you engage in trying to please the Personality of Godhead in pure devotional service, then whatever other desires that you have will either be satisfied or removed, and at the same time, you'll get the ultimate goal of life.
So what is the procedure?
Oh, okay. Any Any questions or comments? Yes?
I've heard that, like, if you have material desires and you approach Krishna, but you also want pure devotional service, and he takes care of whatever needs to happen for you to have pure devotional service. But what if, but are you saying that even if someone doesn't want anything to do with pure devotional service, they really are only approaching God just to have their material desires fulfilled? They really don't even want to serve. They're just not even interested in selfless service. They just want their own material desires to keep being fulfilled. Then will Krishna still purify them to give them pure devotional service, or will he just continue to reciprocate with their desire for material things?
It appears from this verse that if they're approaching Krishna for these things, and but it in the purport it's said that not only do they have to be praying, you know, to Krishna, they have to be practicing, trying to satisfy Krishna. In other words, like Dhruva Maharaj, he didn't just have a desire. He followed the instructions of Narada Muni to go to a certain place and chant a certain mantra. So part of the what's being recommended here is Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusha Param. One has to engage in the practice of devotional service. So it would seem that you can't just be selfishly desiring something without engaging in some practice of devotional service. That appears to be what this verse is saying. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. That means tivrena, with great force, bhakti yogena, by devotional service to the Lord, yajeta, should worship purusham param. So from this verse and purport, it seems there has to be, you know, something more than just the bare desire to get something from Krishna. One has to engage in the practices of devotional service. But even if one has these other desires, in addition to this willingness to practice devotional service, then either Krishna will fulfill those desires in a way that doesn't ultimately harm one, and or Krishna will remove those desires and one won't have them anymore. But it seems there has to be, from this verse, some practice of devotional service as well. And then, you know, Krishna will either satisfy or remove the desire and give one ultimately pure devotional service. But there can be such a thing as a jata sukriti, you know, that, you know, even any contact with Krishna and, you know, can be purifying and one can get some benefit. But this verse that we're looking at today appears to me to suggest that one has to practice bhakti yoga, like Srila Prabhupada says, This implies, let's see, similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc. may be performed by one and all regardless of inner motive. So I think your question was, if you just go to Krishna and ask for something, will you get it and become a pure devotee? Not necessarily. It seems here one has to engage in this abhideya or practice of devotional service. And then even if one does have other desires, they'll be purified ultimately. Yes, that appears to be the message here. Yes.
So, in regards to the verse and the subject of the class, sometimes there are certain prayers of the acharyas which can be confusing on this point, that we find like Akama, Mahabhagavat souls are saying that they're not worthy, that they're too contaminated to perform devotional service, or like Nodahari Chakravarti won't enter the temple and will fan the deity from outside, or even I think in Shyamala Kishore's class last week, we were talking about Srila Prabhupada saying that it's no small thing to serve God and even denying his own position as a proper servant of God. Can you expand on that point, and what's the difference between an Akama Mahabhagavat soul saying something like that and our position?
Well, they're, of course, they're still engaging in the practices of devotional service. It's, there are a couple of ways to look at it. One is that it's an example for us, because in, you know, my experience, and you know, perhaps maybe in your experience, you know, we've encountered the phenomenon. I know even in my own life that when we first come to the practice of devotional service, we may overestimate our own advancement and qualification. I mean, it's like the instant pure devotee phenomenon. So, sometimes, I mean, I know myself, practically the day I walked into, you know, the temple in Washington, D.C. in 1974, I had read the books. I'd read Nectar of Devotion. I thought, I'm already there, and these people will just have to recognize it. So, so I think one purpose that these exalted souls do that is to remind, you know, neophyte devotees that there's a process of purification that we have to undergo. And, you know, we shouldn't try to, you know, jump immediately to the highest, you know, platform. And then another reason why they do that. It's an actual expression of a very exalted platform of, you know, devotional service. Vi pralumba seva, service and separation, feeling unworthy. When, you know, at the end of his life, Madhavendra Puri, a great devotee, was chanting one verse that manifested these feelings of separation and unworthiness. And I, Dina Dayadra Nante, I forget the exact verse, but the essence of it is, oh, my Lord of Mathura, where are you? I'm feeling so unworthy. And Lord Chaitanya would regularly chant, you know, that verse. Ashli Shiva Padaratam Panastama Madarshanam Marmatam Karotava. You know, he would chant verses manifesting this feeling of unworthiness. And that is a very exalted state of, you know, devotional service. Is a kind of ecstasy. So that's another reason, you know, why, you know, they do that. You know, they're, but if you look at their activities, you know, in other words, it's not like they say, oh, I'm so fallen, I feel I'm unworthy, and this and that. And then they're out in the streets, you know, drinking alcohol and eating meat. And, you know, no, they're chanting Hare Krishna practically 20 hours a day, you know, sleeping 1 or 2 hours, just eating a little bit of food each day, and just, you know, so it's a manifestation of ecstatic symptoms of a very exalted nature. But the other reason I said is to remind us that we have a long way to go. Yes.
Dhruva Maharaj, he beheld the Narayan form of Krishna. He didn't behold the Krishna form, right?
Yes.
Well, just saying that it wasn't like he, his meditation achieved the form of Krishna, so that's my point. Or what's your comment on that?
These are Vishnu Tattva forms. You know, they're expansions of Krishna. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada uses, you know, the terminology Krishna to represent those things as well. So in one sense, you could say it's not Krishna. In another sense, it is, because they're his direct expansions. Like, you know, Krishna, you know, once, you know, Krishna, you know, before the rasa dance, you know, he wanted to have a private meeting with Radharani. So he left the other gopis and he hid in some bushes waiting for Radharani to come. And when he left the other gopis, they went looking for him. So they were kind of searching around, a group of them, and they saw, you know, over by some bushes, some blue form. And they thought, okay, that's Krishna. So, when Krishna saw them coming, he shifted into his Narayan form with four arms. And, you know, they came and they saw, oh, it's not Krishna, it's Lord Narayan.
please, Lord Narayan, grant us the mercy we can someday achieve, Krishna. All right. And then they left. So then later, Radharani comes along, and Krishna decides, okay, I'm in my forearm form. Let me have a little fun with Radharani. But he couldn't maintain his forearm form in the presence of Radharani, even though he was trying. So, the point was that forearm expansion that Krishna manifested to the gopis and to Radharani, was that Krishna or not? Yeah, actually it is Krishna. So these Vishnu Tattva expansions of Krishna are, in a sense, Krishna. But they're also different in a sense. So Srila Prabhupada uses the term, Krishna appeared to Dhruva. Doesn't say in all cases Narayan did. Although it was the forearm form, but in a sense it's also Krishna. Well, each case, I suppose, is different. But the part of the practice of devotional service that is established in Lord Chaitanya's movement is not just being concerned about one's own happiness, but being concerned about, the happiness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who wants to see everyone, become Krishna conscious. Ideally, a devotee shouldn't be interested in his or her own happiness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a description of what's called, what Krishnadas Kaviraj calls the mystery of devotional service. Namely, that the gopis who manifest this highest form of bhakti, they're not interested in their own happiness. They're just interested in the happiness of Krishna. But by doing that, automatically, they become satisfied. And it's called the mystery of devotional service. Because normally we think that in order to satisfy my own deepest desires, I have to pay attention to them and minister to them. But the mystery of devotional service is if a devotee simply tries to satisfy the desires of Krishna, Krishna's representatives, then automatically they become satisfied. And there are different examples given how that works, like eating foodstuff. If you keep it in your hand, you don't experience the benefit. But if you give it to the mouth and it goes to the stomach, then, you know, that energy is distributed throughout, you know, the whole body, and all the organs and limbs of the body get benefit from it. So it's probably for most of us, this is an ideal to be strived for. Maybe it's not the reality of where we are. But that ideal standard is definitely given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Nectar of Devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam. Anything else? Oh, it's time for prasadam now. Okay. So, Prabhupada, all the same, Prabhupada.
Since you're really expert in the movement on it, it's described in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that one of the reasons for Krishna's appearance, Bhumi was feeling the burden of demons who were disguised as kings, who had created unnecessary, warfare by accumulating an overabundance of military strength. And I was wondering if that was true 5,000 years ago. I'm not asking for a definitive yes, I know, or no, I don't know, but is it possible that such demons could be here today, right now, who are actually disguised as, you know, our leaders, but are in reality nothing but demons? Is that a possibility?
Yeah.
Oh. Very good. I actually asked Balavanta Prabhu not long ago when he was here, he gave a class, and I asked him about that same question. And he said, funny you asked that, because I'm the one who asked Prabhupada that question. When he was running for office in Atlanta for a mayor, he was wanted to know who he was up against. And Prabhupada said that they weren't. He said they were demons. He told Balavanta that. Balavanta was very adamant on that point.
Yeah. So possible, yes.
Possible. Likely? I mean, the way they try to present the atheistic, view at their in all the universities, and how they won't allow, even the mention of a creator to be mentioned in their classrooms. That seems to me a sign of a big demon.
Yeah, I don't have any
definitive
personal knowledge but the principle is there. Well, for example, the whole, in the prelude to the Mahabharata war, it said that asuras, of course we say, demon, it's an English word, and it has certain, connotations, but Sanskrit word is asura, those who are opposed to the principles of God consciousness. Doesn't necessarily correspond to what people think of necessarily. Yeah, when you use the word, English word demon.
Yeah.
But there are asuras, personalities opposed to the principles of God consciousness. And they took birth in different families of royal dynasties on the earth to execute their plan. And Krishna and his associates took birth, appeared in different families to execute their plan. So, the same kind of thing can be going on now. If we accept the reality that material bodies are vehicles for spirit souls that have previously existed elsewhere in other forms,
right,
then, you know, we don't necessarily know the history of the soul that is now in the body of, you know, some leader or influential person. So, I mean, Srila Prabhupada also said that, you know, his guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, was sending different souls to take birth in the Western world to assist him, you know, in his mission. So, we don't know who we all are here. You know, what our previous births were and why we're here in these particular bodies in this particular place and time. So if it's true for us, it can also be true for those who are kind of opposing the kinds of things that we're representing. Yeah.